This podcast is presented by NXAI, your partner for time series foundation models and physical AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and my guest today is our good old friend Jakub Tomczak from the US. Jakub, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, welcome, everyone. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Greetings to San Francisco, and we want to give an update on what's going on in the Silicon Valley. And Jakub, we need to talk about Anthropic and the ban. What's the discussion like in the US on this topic?
Right. So this is indeed an extremely interesting situation and case, because this is, I think, for the first time at this scale, at least. And so it's still, I think, not necessarily clear why this happened. I heard these rumors that supposedly Fable and this Mythos, they breach classified national security agency systems, and the US government got really spooked by that and they decided to ban it. But in the US itself, it is only banned to non-US citizens.
Yeah, that's interesting, right?
Yes, yes. So this is very interesting. So this is really something peculiar, I would say. So this is what I heard. I don't know if this is like some, you know, smoke and mirrors for something bigger, or maybe something that is connected with IPOs that are happening or are going to happen. So let's see.
What is your opinion on that?
So it's really hard to say. It's really a very weird situation. So I had a chance to use Fable for like a day or two.
What was your impression?
Yeah, it really was really good. But on the other hand, I didn't get this, you know, impression like, wow, like we have the Skynet and it's going to kill us all kind of feeling. It was like, as you know, like typically with all these big LLMs. So it was like, okay, this is the next version of that. It seems to work better, but I don't know.
It seems to work better when it comes to coding, or when it comes to which domain?
Coding. Like at this point, like I think that what is the most interesting is coding. Like everyone talks about, you know, replacing software developers. So I think coding is the number one application. With regard to other aspects, you know, like I don't know, having references, it's still pretty risky to copy whatever these LLMs give us. With regard to some facts, it's like really necessary to check whether they are like correct or not. But with coding, I think because they put so much effort into that, so like I think everyone uses these models or agents for coding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when you say it was not a revolution from your first impression, right?
Yes, because you know, for me, a revolution would be when it, for instance, consumes fewer tokens and works better, or at least the same. For me, this would be a revolution. I would also accept a big step if it worked much better, something like really much better. It was too short to properly assess that, to be fair, but for sure it consumed more tokens, that I can say. So to me, it was like, all right, fine, the next version, it seems to work better, more stable maybe in terms of performance, but I saw that these tokens were like very quickly I got to this point like, oh, you used your 90% of tokens, right? So I was like, all right.
So it's still burning a lot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but you say it's not a revolution, so we are not at the end of scale, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I don't, like, again, so please take it with a pinch of salt what I'm trying to say, because for me, a revolution would be, you know, when, for instance, I can run the same quality model on my laptop. That would be, to me, a true revolution, right? Something like, and by revolution, I mean also some sort of at least a paradigm shift. So this would mean like, I don't know, we are not using transformers. This would be like, wow, mind-blowing to me. Or something like, this is really energy efficient, or this is really small. You know, this kind of aspects, because in my opinion, all these methods right now we have, they are more like fine, we are getting better and better. Most probably very soon we'll get some researchers or companies that will bring us the next level of coding, most probably with LLMs, maybe less flexible, more constrained, but they will be more reliable. But to me, this is not a paradigm shift. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like really...
Okay, yeah, I got it. I want to come back to the ban, right? So how do you see this from a European perspective? You were born in Poland, you studied in Amsterdam, you teach in Amsterdam, and now you are in the US. From a European perspective, we have a discussion when it comes to Mistral. We see that they are building models, but I don't see people using their models in a broader perspective. So from a European perspective, the ban, what does that mean?
So this is definitely a clear signal.
How many signals we need?
Yes, exactly. For me, this is a clear signal that, yeah, wake up, because you are not in charge anymore, right? So I think that our typical European way of thinking is that Americans are our good friends and best friends even, exactly, and we can rely on them, and not really, right? It's especially if it comes to business. After all, you have to be careful about these friendships, right? So this is definitely a big wake-up call, in my opinion. The second aspect is that, well, in some sense, Europe, let's be honest, right? Europe lost this battle about LLMs and transformers. I would really deeply consider thinking of new approaches, new ideas.
Yeah, but do you think the war is over? Now focus on Chinese open weight models? Or what is the idea now? What is the European idea?
No, I would really think about and invest heavily in some crazy ideas at the moment. I really think that there are many very nice ideas floating around. But what we miss in Europe, and I think that our listeners won't get it wrong, but one good thing about Americans, and actually these days also Chinese, is that they are not afraid of scaling things up. In Europe, I still have this feeling that we have this mindset of, oh, let's do it like in a lean way, you know, small scale. I would really heavily invest in big things. And I'm not talking about these AI hubs, but like something that Mistral actually started.
But what happened to Mistral? Where did they lost their traction?
Yeah, I think that I'm not 100% sure if they lost the traction. I think that they just recalculated everything that they cannot catch up with OpenAI and Claude, because there is this AI bubble for sure. And the amount of investment is like simply crazy, unprecedented. So it's really crazy. So Mistral alone cannot do that. So I think that they just refocused any AI, right? Physics. So I think that they realized that, well, it's a good idea to actually invest in these more niche applications. But by niche, I don't mean wars, not at all. I'm just saying like filling the blanks. And I think this is actually a very good idea. So I think that they maybe actually be smart about it. And another aspect that people don't realize, I think in Europe, because when I talk to Europeans, like we have to remember that NVIDIA, AMD, hardware, they're also American companies.
But they rely on ASML.
Exactly. And this is to me like a paradox, right? Like Europe has the grounds, yet we don't have in Europe a company or companies that actually produce European hardware. So this is to me very interesting as well and really missed.
Yeah, but I think the argument that ASML is the basic for everything, that's nice, but that's nice for ASML, but that won't help the whole ecosystem in Europe, right? So it's one company and it's good and we are very proud of that. But
yes,
in the US, we have 20, 25, 50, 100 companies building bases for stuff, right?
Exactly. And also another aspect that I miss in Europe is, and this actually Anthropic case shows us greatly. To be powerful, we need to have these big companies, let's say ASML, why not? Or Bosch or Siemens, right? That actually they should, and by should I mean even from the business perspective for them, they should build a real ecosystem around them. And what I mean by that, for instance, 2 weeks ago, I think, I attended this Snowflake Summit, right? And then you enter this booth section, right? And you have, I know, 100 startups that live in the ecosystem of Snowflake, right? They do something with data, and they are under the wings of Snowflake, and they are supported by them.
And that's an interesting point. But because when you think, because there are a lot of industry companies are doing this ecosystem stuff, right?
Right.
But I think the difference to US ecosystem is that everybody makes a profit in this.
Yes.
So everybody earns money, and it's so easy to get in touch with the big industrial players. For sure, you can print your logo on your website that you are partner of an ecosystem, but that doesn't mean that you get money out of that, right?
Exactly.
And that's the difference, because when you explain the show Snowflake, they are all making money with Snowflake on one corner here, one yes. corner there, and they are building a really ecosystem where everybody participates and earns money. Yeah,
exactly. And this was like I talked with my colleagues that attended the Databricks Summit a week later or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, they told me exactly the same story, right? There are these all companies that, as you said, they earn money. They have these partnerships that mutually is beneficial. And I think this is what we miss as well in Europe. It's not about, as you brilliantly put, it's not about putting a logo on your web page, right? Who cares? But it's really about maybe, and this is the same with Anthropic, for instance. They build this ecosystem, and OpenAI, they build this ecosystem around them. So they, for instance, don't give money to startups, but they give tokens, for instance, right? And so this is like, you give us something, we give you something, right? We build these partnerships not for the next month, but for not next year, but for years.
Exactly. And it's interesting because there's a success story between OpenAI and Molecule One, I think, from Poland.
Yes.
They published something that they worked together. I was not aware of that, but that was very interesting for me. Yeah.
Yes, precisely. Because this is, in my opinion, the way to go, right? Like, it's really, and yeah, exactly. So we have a Polish company, Molecule One, brilliant guys, amazing entrepreneurs. And yeah, they went over the big pond, and they talked to OpenAI to do that, right?
And not for free.
Not for free.
That's
yes.
important. That's important because in Europe, we have the mentality that the big players say, we can do a cooperation for free.
Yes. Yes.
You can be proud to have your logo, our logo on your website.
Yes.
So
yes.
you are part of our ecosystem, but for free, it won't pay bills, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the most difficult stage of any company is to kick off, right? And here we need this support. Yeah. So this case with Fable also shows that as well.
Let's come back to the ban, right? So imagine you are now a CEO of a mid-sized company in Europe and you heavily rely on Anthropic and Claude and stuff like that. What would be your strategy?
Oh, that's actually a very nice question because this is something that I have in mind for the last few months because actually, you know...
You're going into the consultant business, I think. Yeah.
Yes. And what is important is to actually be smart about this stuff. And I think that this case shows that you cannot rely on one provider, right? So you have to build your platform or whatever, your product in this way that you heavily rely on one one provider. So there's a very nice example from Japan. There's this very interesting company called Sakana AI. And they, like, I read it, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago. They just released a product called Sakana Fugu, if I pronounce it properly. And this is a single agent that orchestrates multiple models, like multiple LLMs.
So it's AutoML for LLMs.
Yes. And they exactly. And their idea is that you buy one single model. And then under the hood, it orchestrates different agents or different LLMs to solve some complex multi-step tasks. And to me, this is actually closer to what we started with. So this is closer to some revolution in some sense. This is literally the first time in many months that I was interested in, because this is like exactly what we miss, something that is a bit leaner, something that is simpler, something that, okay, again, maybe Sakana AI would be my provider. I cannot maybe necessarily rely on them, right, entirely, but at least they are like this good middleman that they help us to be independent from providers of specific particular models. And so to me, this is very interesting. This is like, in my opinion, the future for that.
So you give the model your task, and the model decides which LLM to use at the end.
Exactly. Like under the hood.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's running on not on-prem, so it's a cloud application, right?
I think so, yes. Yes, they have like two papers published at these big AI conferences. And so I didn't have a chance to read them because, as I said, yesterday or 2 days ago, I read about it. But it looks very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's really an AutoML approach, right? So
yes.
Find the right model for the right task at the end.
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah, we will share the papers in the show notes. And because we talked about sharing, you shared an interesting post on coding last week for anyone who hasn't read. Can you explain your topic there? Because Peter informed me about the post and he was very impressed by that.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. So this is the idea that I keep in my head. I kept in my head for like many months, maybe even a year or so. So to me, like, I really love vibe coding, but since, you know, I'm a computer scientist and I also studied system science, right? So to me, when I code, I actually want to have some sort of degree of control. And I kept in my head something that, okay, I would love to have a diagram that defines inputs, outputs. I can describe what I need in every single block. So what is the functionality of this block? And then I want to combine all these blocks. And this should be in this, you know, feeling of vibe coding. So it shouldn't be like super formalized. It should be something quite simple, right? That basically almost anyone can do that. And it shouldn't be like this UML diagram, something super fancy and complicated. It should be something simple. And then what I get from that, I get a very nicely prepared prompt for instance, some coding LLM. And so I vibe coded that program actually, and like I called it vibe prompter. And this was also something that I needed. Actually, it came from my need of creating a demo that I worked on for the last few months, okay, a couple of months. And then I was really scared that, you know, once a project grows larger, it's very easy to get lost in this vibe code.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then I wanted to have at least some degree of trust, let's say, in this code, because I had my diagram, right? I have my diagram. And then I actually used that for creating this demo, this proof of concept. And it turned out that actually it worked very, very nicely. It really produced what I wanted with very few iterations, like basically like correcting some small bugs, like, you know, some button maybe didn't work or something like that. But the logic behind it was there, and it was exactly as I predicted this. And yeah, so this is like, to me, maybe we should, you know, maybe give some freedom from vibe coding to create these diagrams, and then we can at least expect the same level of easiness, let's say, but with greater control and better results. And I even asked Claude, because I use Claude Code for that, and I even asked Claude, like, oh, was it useful for you? And then it responded that yes, because I had all inputs, outputs defined. I had all blocks defined. So then it was easier and all descriptions defined. So it was easier for me to fill in simply this with code and combine them all together into one single application.
Okay, that's interesting. We will share the blog post in our show notes too. Very interesting approach. At the end, Jakob, what else is on your agenda in the moment? What do we overlook when we talk about USA, Silicon Valley and AI?
Yeah, so definitely what must be mentioned, but probably everyone heard about it, is about this IPOs of Anthropic, OpenAI, SpaceX, right?
Yes, for sure. So you have some shares of SpaceX?
No, unfortunately not. But it was very interesting to hear that yesterday SpaceX announced that they are going to acquire Cursor. So this is a big news. And I think that we need to mention that because IPOs will require from these companies to be now very serious, right? Like in the sense that they really need to start earning money. And I think that...
A lot of money.
So now, like, it's really interesting to see if we really live in this AI bubble and what's going to happen. Because I think this would be like now it's like we are checking, like in poker, right? Like now we check. Let's see what you have. And if your products can be really useful. So this is very interesting.
What about NVIDIA, Jakob?
Right. So this is another very interesting example. And I want to mention both NVIDIA and AMD, because NVIDIA and AMD, they announced literally like 2 days in between, I think, or like a week or so, that they have these small dedicated GPU-based desktops. I think one is called DGX Spark, and the other one is this Ryzen AI Max Plus something. Both priced around the same, like $4,000 or $5,000. And this is, in my opinion, a very interesting signal that this company starts like preparations for these GPU-based desktops that are on-premises, right? And I think that this is like a missing spot so far, because like I get all these computing centers and data centers, it's fine, right? But actually, in the end of the day, like, can we just live like that? That we're just scaling those apps, and it's like it would be amazing to have this like even agentic AI, whatever, running like next to you, right, in your office. I think this is a very interesting signal. Right now, I think these desktops are too small to run something really serious. But as I said earlier, if the revolution comes and all these models become smaller, like one or let's say smaller, then suddenly NVIDIA and AMD are prepared for that, right?
Then they are prepared, exactly. Yeah, because that's the way to go. I think that what we see, and it's very interesting. So it's a product for the next generation, right?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. What else do you see in the US? What else is remarkable?
So I would say that right now, like really, everyone was frantic about these IPOs. This was really like huge news. I think everyone was crazy about this Fable, and it really overshadowed everything else. Other than that, I don't really see anything so like electrifying, let's say. This hardware thing, I think this was very interesting. And yeah, I would say that's it so far for now. Let's see what the future brings.
Okay, perfect. Jakob, it was a pleasure to talk to you again. Always welcome to our podcast. What is on your personal agenda for the next coming weeks? Holidays, or do you plan some vacations in Europe, or what is on your agenda?
No, like there are some hidden plans, let's say. I hope that we can reveal them soon.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of work, actually.
Okay. We keep fingers crossed for you, and all the best and greetings to Silicon Valley.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you, everyone.